welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we have a very interesting show. This is your show dealing with what we call metaphysics, which is the physics that's somewhat at the bleeding edge and sometimes the cutting edge of science and physics itself, and also spirituality, which means the concept that there is something greater out there that has created us, and no matter what your individual religious beliefs are, that's what this show supports, is that there's something greater than what we call us that is part of the creation of all. Now, in thinking about that, I wanted to do a show that kind of lets you all know what some of the things are that we are doing. When I say we, there's a collective group of us that kind of tries to make the world a better place and improve it, and does so through various projects. There have been questions about, like, what are the things that you guys are doing? And so I thought that tonight would be a good time to try to fill you in on some of those areas that we are doing things in. And, of course, you're all invited to participate if in any way that you want to contribute to the things that we do, even if it's just to say hello, but you can do more than that. If you want, you can always call us. You can go to the website, agelesswisdom.com, and check us out. And you can let us know what we're maybe collectively interested in. During this show, you can call in at 877-876-5227 if you're in the U.S. If you're over in Canada, you can call in at 888-815-9756. Love to hear from you during the show. If you want to email us, you can do that too. And in addition, you can contact us at any time if you have questions or thoughts. Now, I know a lot of you are buying some of the textbook I wrote called Life's Hidden Meaning, and we know that because some of the distributors have contacted us and say, hey, we need more of your books. You must be selling more. Well, okay, great. I'm glad that you're interested in that. And if you are, and you are reading it, you can call in to us, and either I or others will try to help you understand some elements of the textbook if you're having trouble understanding it, because there's some scientific parts that are difficult for some people, and there's other parts that are just, you know, like it's unusual material, and sometimes it's not the easiest thing to understand. Also, if you are reading the book, you might want to start a study group. Some people have done that over time. And if you want to do that, just let us know, and we can set it up so that I or someone else can even call in on occasion to your study group and answer questions and help people gain a better understanding. All of that is available. I thought I'd mention that because tonight we're going to go over the conservation measures that we have been going through and using out at a ranch in Farms and Conservancy that we have somewhat contributions to, control somewhat over, sometimes it might control us, in a place called Pinal County, which is different than where we're kind of stationed some of the time. I'm talking from a county called Maricopa, which is right next to Pinal County right now. That's where the radio station is. But nonetheless, if you're interested in any of these subjects, conservation, things dealing with global warming, and a thing called desertification, which is a really, really serious extension of global warming, or if you're interested in the development of and conservation of plants and animal habitat and dealing with mosquito either abatement or mosquito control, these are things that we are involved in. And I'm going to tell you what we're doing, and some of this stuff is like right out there. The stuff that is so new, but yet in many respects it has been tried before but not put together in the ways we're doing, that it can make a big difference, a big change. We are actually doing things that can change even global warming as it stands right now. Amazing that we, as a spiritual group, so to speak, have this capability. Now, you should also be aware that the projects we're doing are certainly not only just for conservation, but they are supposed to be able to earn some income. They're commercial because you can't overcome the world's crises, especially with desertification, if you don't come up with viable business alternatives for people to earn a living. Because that's what desertification does, is it eliminates the ability for people to earn a living and to even feed themselves. And I'm going to explain all that, but I want you to understand that what we're doing is not just like some kind of do-good thing where we're probably going to lose our shirt and put out a lot of money and not get anywhere. No, the purpose is really to be able to show that it's a viable income-producing source. Wow. We are doing very, hopefully, good things that are helpful for our planet. That's the concept. Now, that doesn't mean we don't do some things that may not bring in any money, but that's a different issue. I'm talking about the whole ball of wax and not just some small part of it. We're also involved in energy conservation, part of the projects we do are to reduce the amount of energy expenditure and also decrease the signature that we put on the planet in terms of putting carbon into the atmosphere, etc. You've all, I think, probably have heard something about that. Okay, so what is it that we have? Well, we've got about, if you add it all up, something like 1,130 acres of land that has various levels of plant life and topography, and because they're at different altitudes on the side of a mountain. And it's in a desert environment, meaning that there's very little water. It doesn't rain very much. It rains a little bit more than it does in the Phoenix area, if you're around Phoenix at all. But many of you I'm talking to don't even live in the United States. But still, it's a project that is designed to face as much as possible the problems that are at hand and have been for a number of years. I'll give you a little bit of history. If we go back in time to about June of 2001, the world was a different place then, believe me. We, as a group of people who are concerned about especially global warming and desertification, were looking at the options of what could we do to create a venue in which we could show experimentally that properties that have been damaged and that may not be survivable in the near future or even in the present day can be converted into ongoing enterprises that could supply food and income in a world of change. We recognized back then that global warming was a serious issue. Not everybody was in that thought process, believe it or not, 6-7 years ago. But we were thinking about it. And so we got together and started to discuss how can we make a difference. And one of the things that we thought of was, well, we could look for a venture that we could maybe afford, at least to produce, that would allow us to put in motion amazing change methods in dealing with the problems that the world was soon to be facing, and that we could show that some of the methods that we had as ideas would be really functional. What were some of the problems that we were considering was, well, besides global warming in general, we were worried about diseases that are spread through mosquitoes, because most people are unaware of this in the United States, but mosquito-borne diseases are very, very serious problems in a large part of our globe. As things heat up, they could get a little worse in some areas. Depends where you live. And it could even be a greater problem here in the United States as well. Now, how do you deal with mosquitoes? Well, you can spray, you know, and spread poisons all over the place. And that's been tried, and sometimes it is even effective. Of course, there's a downside to that. You're adding something into the environment that may not be good for people. There are some types of mosquito sprays that are not too bad. They work somewhat well. But the problem is that you have to keep using them, like neem oil as an example. But the problem is that in countries where this is really a problem, they usually don't have the finances to be able to stay up with the problem using that kind of methodology. One of the ways you can deal with mosquitoes is to not have standing water. And by having moving water, even if it's moving relatively slowly, you can reduce the mosquito problem by like a tenth, even a hundredth. So it depends upon how you do it. And so we thought we would, in part of what we wanted to do, show that we could work, it was possible for to include in our project that we could put in an effective mosquito abatement program. And that's not so easy. Believe me, you've got to think about, well, where's the water and how to deal with it and that sort of thing. But actually, that was part of our thought process. We also wanted to create a way of showing that we could restore land that had been significantly harmed and damaged, not just from global warming, but through another problem that is the overherding, the overuse of pasture lands by either cattle or other animals. Cattle can be particularly difficult if there's a lot of them. And we were looking for properties that might have that as an issue. And that sounds strange. Hey, let's go find some property that's been damaged. Yeah, well, that's the concept. If you really want to do some good, you've got to look for something that has a need. And some of the need has to come in proving that you can make a difference. And so you can't start with pristine and beautiful property. You've got to start with something, area that may have a problem. And sure enough, not very far from at least the metropolitan Phoenix area or the metropolitan Tucson area, right in between the two, is an area of pretty significant damage from overgrazing with cattle and other animals. And there's been a lot of drought in the last 10 years or so, and there's been a huge increase in some parts with mosquitoes, and also West Nile virus and other illnesses that are definitely showing up on our shores. Of course, they came from other countries, but they're here now. Okay, so we thought, we being the collective of us, that if we could find the ideal property, we would come up with a plan of how to develop it and develop it in a way that would really, really show that we can make a difference and we can improve the life of many people. When we did our research, we found that global warming was jeopardizing 60% of the world population in terms of desertification. That means that their productive lands would become non-productive in terms of growing food and producing an income in the next 10 to 20 years. Wow. And this, we that shocked us to find that that was the case. That's a huge number of people that could be displaced and may not be able to survive. It could lead to all kinds of political problems, including wars and other things. And some wars that we're seeing, even in Africa, are due to this effect. And so the interesting thing is that what we're trying to accomplish, what we're trying to change, has to deal with such big, big issues. Wait till you hear our solutions, which I'm not going to tell you right now because, you know, I like to do little cliffhangers here and there. But we have some great solutions that we have come up with, and we have already experimentally proven their viability in some cases. I'm sure you're going to want to hear about this. And you will hear about it when we come back, yes, from break, which will be in about 2.5 or so minutes from right now.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
The following statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. ViroPel is a dietary supplement. It is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Colds and flu are a problem that many want answers and alternatives for. Let me tell you about ViroPel, a certified all-organic herbal and nutraceutical formula designed to support relief from symptoms of cold and flu. With so much concern about potential bird flu outbreaks, there may be some help. ViroPel's patents include proven immune enhancement, adding significant preventative and other immune system benefits. In effectiveness trials, most experienced relief from symptoms in 2 to 3 days. Think about how long your last flu symptoms lasted. Incredible and amazing are the words most often used to describe the effects of ViroPel. Using 136 of the highest grade ingredients in a new science gives ViroPel its effectiveness. Relief could be just 1 to 3 days away. To learn more or to purchase ViroPel, call Alternative Health Approaches at 800-777-7850. That's 800-777-7850. Or visit ViroPel, that's ViruPel.org.
Well, we're back, and this is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we are going over our conservation measures and development of our ranch and farms and conservancy in a county called Pinell, which is right next door to where the radio station I'm speaking from is. And I'm hoping that you're going to find that some of these solutions, which I'm going to now cover for the rest of the show, are very intriguing and hopefully interesting to you out there. Some of you have said, well, what are you guys doing? You've been talking on this particular station or these stations for a while, but you haven't told us what you actually are up to. And I thought I would let you know what we're up to so that you can, if you want, you can let us know if you've been interested in finding out more or anything about that. Okay, so we were concerned about the climate. And what happens to lands that get overgrazed, that get overheated from global warming, and that it rains on considerably less than it might have 100 years ago? And that's exactly what we were up against. We had a piece of property that has about 1,130 acres or so, and we found that the rainfall had dropped from a high of maybe 12 to 14 inches down to maybe an average of about 10 inches in the last 10 years. And besides that, the property had been so, we'll say, wiped out due to a lot of overgrazing of cattle that it had basically some parts that were extremely parched. The soil itself had become sterilized, if you can imagine that, because of compression due to, you know, the cattle have a lot of weight. And it, after they wipe out most of the plant life, the weight of their hooves, et cetera, crushes in the soil, and it gets very compacted. Also, this particular property had like a floodplain effect where it would flood out parts because it was sort of like a bowl. And water would rain on it, but just settle in the middle of it. There was like a natural wash, a big wash that goes through it, and it would drain eventually through that wash. But the point is that before it did that, you had a standing water of up to a foot or more after a, you know, not that big of a rain. And so it would flood out, and that would leach the soil out. It would also lead to a lot of mosquitoes growing at the same time. So it was a kind of a nasty place, you might say. And there wasn't much vegetation over parts of it because it had been destroyed. So we said, wow, this is a place we can make a difference. We can do something about it. Now, let me tell you some about weather, global warming in particular. If you're on a mountain range like we are, when very warm, hot, dry air is being developed over the land, it tends to push any cloud systems that come over the mountain higher. And as it does, it develops like a, they call it a high-pressure zone. It reduces the amount of rainfall. That's why it went from 14 up down to like 10 inches of rain, because as this property dried out and it got compressed and a little biological activity in the soil, which really stopped almost all plants from being able to grow, and the leaching as well from flooding, you get a point where there is so little protection of the soil actually radiates most of the heat right back up into the atmosphere. And you get this big push up of heated air that keeps a lot of the normal rain clouds from being able to rain, because you've got to have a shift in pressure and a shift in temperature for a cloud to produce rain. That rain actually comes from these shifts, these changes. And we were losing that in the last few decades of time. And the last 10 years have been particularly bad because of added drought issues. So it's been a tough time out there. Now, well, how do you correct that? Well, you've got to kind of reverse the whole process. You've got to be able to get plant life to grow, which means that you've got to drain effectively the area of standing water. And that also takes care of a lot of the mosquito problem, by the way, at the same time, particularly if you do it correctly so that the water keeps moving at a slower rate, but in a way that you drain it to an area of a drain area where it can move in a larger area in a slower fashion, but it keeps moving. It doesn't just sit there. And so the larvae cannot take hold and grow, because mosquito larvae don't grow well in moving water. As a matter of fact, they virtually don't grow at all. They need standing water for days in which there's no movement in order for them to mature. That gets rid of a lot of the mosquitoes. Hey, what a great idea. And you can do this with just drainage ditches. Build big drainage ditches that go into big drainage areas, and that's a good thing. You don't want the water to just hang around, especially a foot above the ground where they're percolating from the heat and everything, and the mosquitoes are saying, oh, gee, I think I'll make more mosquitoes. It makes fun for us, you know. No, we don't want swimming pools for mosquitoes. Instead, we want land that is good to grow things on. So you've got to have that. You also have to have the soil conditioned by tilling it to some extent, a small amount, and or at the same time maybe get some of the leach nutrients back into the soil that were leached out, if that's the case. And then the most important thing is you've got to be able to keep water that, after it does rain, below the surface of the soil and held so that the roots of plants can continue to be nurtured with the water that they need. Now, the problem is that there's a drought. And so even if it rains, and even if you can get more water than usual on a plant, which I'll tell you how you can do that very simply without irrigating, even if you can achieve that, then you also have to come up with an answer to how you keep the water in the soil. And I'll tell you a solution to that as well. But let me tell you about, first of all, how do you get more water to plants? Because this whole thing starts with plants. I'll get to some animals in a little bit, but the whole thing starts with plants. If you don't have plants, you don't have much capability of sustaining life. Plants are like the beginning of the process, and it's really important. Although minerals are actually below even the plants and starting off properly with the correct mineral content. All right, so how do you get plants in an area where there's not much rain? Like 10 inches is not a lot of rain. Well, first of all, the good news is we're kind of on a hilly part of the side of the mountain. There's up and down areas. And so the good news is that you can do something called dry desert micro catchment farming. That's a lot of words. And what the heck it is, it sounds like a fancy thing, but it actually was created thousands of years ago by even people that lived, the Indians that lived in areas right around where we are. They knew how to do this. Now, it seems to have been lost over time by many cultures, but it's something that can be easily regained. What is done is that a larger area of land is planted where only in places where water naturally flows to the lower lying parts. And that's where you plant your plant. You don't plant it on the hill, you plant it where there's a little dip in the valley. And we're talking only inches of difference in soil, not huge differences, very small. And in areas where it doesn't quite work out that way, as you till the land, you can slightly sculpture it by a couple inches so that the water naturally flows in the areas where you want to plant your plants. Now, for every, if you want to double the amount of water approximately, maybe just slightly less than double, you have to have twice as much land as you would if you had a row of plants in comparison to row farming. So you need more land to support a crop. But the good news is that you're in such good control over how the plants are being nourished with the water, et cetera, that you can get exactly the amount of water you want, and actually it can be very effective in supporting the growth of plants. If you need three times as much, if you need 30 inches of rain a year to grow some food crops, you can actually do that where there's only 10 inches, as long as you're using then give or take a little bit more than three times the amount of land area to grow that crop. Now, you might say, well, what if you run out of land? Well, that's true, but the good news about this process of overcoming desertification is that in most areas where it's taking place, people have oodles, large amounts of land that's not usable. That hasn't even been usable in the last 20, 30, 40 years. So they can convert that land to usable land while they're overcoming the lands that are presently moving towards desertification from preventing it, moving it back to becoming good fertile land for growing food and for growing income crops and for pastoral uses as well. All that is possible by using dry desert microcatchment farming. Yeah, you can do it, and it's not very hard. Even people who don't have mechanized methods can do this because there's so little sculpting necessary to the land. They can do it with just hand tools. A family, say, could do it in, a 40-acre plot or 20-acre plot, and could grow enough food and also produce enough income from that area to be able to live where normally they would be starved out. They would be, unfortunately, without sufficient amounts of water. Now, there's another part of this equation, because if you recall what I said, well, what happens when it doesn't rain? What happens if you don't have rainfall for 4 or 5 months? And in some places with desertification, that's what's going to happen. Well, great news. There are products that were produced 20, 30 years ago or so that are called hydrophilic polymers. They're like little microchips of plastic. And they've gotten better and better with this technology. And some of these little micro, nano, even, size chips, very, very small, some of them, can hold as much as 500 to 700 times their weight in water. And when they hold it in the soil, like it could be 6 inches or more below the ground level, and they don't release the water until the osmotic pressure from the plant root it says, hey, I need some water, and then they release the water and they keep the plant going months and months after it has rained. Wow. That's the ticket. You combine the two. You combine an old technology from thousands of years ago, the microcatchment farming, with hydrophilic polymers, and you now have a viable system for keeping plants alive in areas that would go into complete desert and become unuseful. And that's what we're doing. Yeah, we are doing it. And the interesting thing is when we started this back in June of 01, we couldn't find anybody doing it, the two together. And now we found one or two people in the world that are doing it, which is good. I know it doesn't sound like much of a change. And there was a whole seminar, days and days of seminars from the United Nations a couple months ago about this problem. But unfortunately, they did not come up with this solution, and so they got kind of stymied in trying to find a way of overcoming desertification. Now we're going to be obviously correcting that as we give our information to them and other sources so that people become more aware of this potential solution. Because after all, you know, if you create something, you don't let anybody know about it, it doesn't necessarily help. And of course, I'm speaking to you all tonight because people need to know. You do. Okay, so we are starting literally from the ground up, and we have done some flood control and drainage large drainage areas. Actually, we're using old from 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 even years ago. Depends what part you're talking about. Parts of our of the farms that were used for cattle watering that people dug out holes and made what they call dirt tanks. But these are all connected together in parts of our farm, and we're using that as our drainage area. We actually went in and dug out some of the inside of them because they were so filled in with dirt, they had become like mud bogs and marshes where mosquitoes were going like crazy. But now we fixed that, and we're draining some of the water that was standing on the land, just standing on the land, now into a bigger area of water that's moving slowly off the land. So that the good news is it still feeds the rest, other people's lands further away from us, but at the same time, it keeps the mosquitoes from growing, and it allows us to then develop the areas that now we can use a microcatrion farming gun with the hydrophilic polymers to restructure the land and use it for productive uses. We're going to be planting trees and also other kinds of desert plants. And these are desert trees that take very little water. Some of them can live on actually 8 inches of water a year after they're established. They might need more like 14 or 15 inches the first few years. But luckily, we can do that with the microcatchum farming and the hydrophilic polymers. And we can completely control how much water each plant is going to have, even though we're not doing any irrigation. There is zero irrigation. Because the amount of water the plant needs is controlled by how much hydrophilic polymers we put in and how much we sculpt the land slightly, or we just put the plant in the right place at the right time to receive the natural rainfall. The whole thing is just remarkable. And we've tested this out so far in experiment, and it's working, and so now we're about to go big time with this thing. Yeah. Now, once the trees and shrubs and other plants we've been planting get into the soil, they are going to put in natural bacteria at the roots that will grow into the soil and allow the whole soil to recover. That's very important. We may use small amounts of natural fertilizers as well. And as there's shade developed from the desert trees that we're planting, then the soil starts to cool down, and guess what? That high-pressure area that was pushing all the rain clouds away starts to develop more low pressure because of the cooling effect from shade, and we're going to get back some of the water that presently is moving way off to the east of us and producing floods because it's raining too much over there and not enough where we are. So we're actually switching some of the problems of global warming. This is a global warming issue, but it's also effect on from overgrazing and other issues that have caused harm to the property. Isn't that fascinating? Well, there's much more to tell you, but yeah, we're at that time where we've got to go to a break. We should be back in less than 3 minutes, and when we come back, I'll tell you even more exciting things that we are doing.
Well, What book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Let me tell you about most supplements that help support joint health, movement, and ease. They usually contain a few helpful substances that work on some people moderately well. For many others, these levels of help are either not enough or are not helpful at all. But there is a product that contains 36 different high-potency and very effective ingredients that support overall joint health, movement, and ease when moving. It's Freedom of Movement by Alternative Health Approaches, and it works in many different ways. This formula is critically balanced to synergistically and dramatically improve joint movement through supportive health, and usually within several hours. The relief generally lasts for an entire day and over time can be permanent. Freedom of Movement comes with a money-back guarantee. Even shipping is refunded for the first bottle. This unique formulation has helped thousands to maintain joint health. The price is $24.95 for a 90-caplet bottle. It's available from Alternative Health Approaches at 800-777-7850. Give this powerful all-natural supplement a try if you haven't found relief from other sources. That's Freedom of Movement. Call 800-777-7850.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, we are talking about conservation measures and other interesting aspects of the ranch, farms, and conservancy that the spiritual group of people that I'm part of has been involved in creating. Yep, and some of the very interesting elements of this creation. So let me continue on and tell you about some of the more exciting things that we have managed to be able to do, which I think is totally fascinating. We had to construct, by the way, I don't know if any of you know any of this, we had to construct our own roads and even some bridges, and we had to put in our own power out there because there was nothing. I mean, literally. This was a place that had some, there was barely a noticeable one single road, and it was just almost completely washed out when we actually got the property. And that road was difficult to even get to. It wasn't even, it wasn't connected to almost anything. It was very difficult to reach. So this has been quite a project. But the gratification of having made some real significant changes is important because we are making a difference. Okay, I was talking about that once you get your plants growing and some shade, you start changing some of the conditions that produce rain. And you actually can increase the overall rainfall by inches per year. Now, of course, we can adjust how much each plant is getting in water through the micro-catchment farming. But nonetheless, it's always better to have some rain. More of it is usually better, provided it isn't floodplaining, which is what we were having before, and you actually keep the water moving and so that you don't have a mosquito issue or some other leaching issues to the soil. We actually effectively dealt with both of those problems, which is great because those were significant problems that we have overcome with very little effort, truly. Now, there is some cost in doing this, but we're using mechanized methods for the most part. People could do some of the same things we're doing in a smaller scale with just literally their hands and just tools, of course, hand tools. And they could do some of the same concepts on a much smaller scale. All right. Now, what are we doing in terms of the rest of the project? Well, we have nurseries, and we have grown some yucca plants and other very rare cacti that we were hoping to replace, place the plant on the property in the near future, the cacti especially, that will repopulate what existed there 100 years ago. Some of these cacti are actually extinct in nature, but we're hoping to get them back growing again. And others, like as example, the yuccas, are rare to be found in the area where we are now. But if you go back to the year 1900, we had yuccas all over our property. So we're replacing some of those. And then we're going to sell some of these as well. Because remember, this whole operation, it has to be economically viable. If it isn't, then you haven't saved the people who are facing desertification, because although they might be able to feed themselves, they also have to produce some income. And that's a big issue for people that are in that lifestyle. And so we hope to be able to help them. Another thing we're doing, and this gets a little bit into the animal realm now, is that we not only created a great drainage area by using these old, somewhat filled in, but not completely, cattle tanks that were built by various people in the past, but we have created an incredible increase in the riparian area that these tanks exist in, because they live near a big wash that goes across our property. Now, that wash we didn't change anything in, because you're not supposed to, so we didn't. But what we did do is we created the riparian area around it to be able to support far more wildlife. And so we've seen incredible amounts of all kinds of birds now living there that weren't living there a few years ago. We even have, from 100 miles away, seagulls flying in for a visit. Isn't that fantastic? We're in the middle of a desert, and from over 100 miles away, from the Gulf of Mexico, actually, they're coming in. And that is remarkable. We have eagles, both golden eagles, and further up on our mountain, we have bald eagles. We've got every kind of amazing animal you can think of. We've got mountain lions and also various kinds of, we'll call them animals that live off of the land, from rabbits to pickery, which is, some people call them javelina, wild pigs, actually, that run around. And they don't bother anybody that we know of, but they live there. We also have an amazing array of various kinds of amphibian life, such as frogs, etc. And this has all increased now because the riparian area is more consistent and it's bigger and it's more helpful for the wildlife. It's great, fantastic. And all this from just a little bit of stuff that I just told you about that we've already done. It's absolutely remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. What else? Well, we built a corral. We haven't got the animals yet to do this because this is a very big project. But we are going to be, in the very near future, raising miniature horses and donkeys. You might say, well, why the miniatures? The miniatures are very, very small. They're about the size of a medium-sized to large-sized dog, and they replace seeing-eye dogs. Replace them because they live, seven times longer or more, and six or seven times longer. And they actually are better at being seeing-eye animals for the people with visual impairment than dogs, because they they can be better trained and are better at finding wherever you want to go to. And in addition to that, they just outlive the dogs. Dogs live about 7 useful years of life after their training on an average. And the miniature horses and miniature donkeys can actually live 35 to 40 years. And they both cost the same to create into seeing eye animals. So actually, the horses and donkeys might be a little bit less expensive because it's a little easier to train them. And so we're going to be offering this because there's only a few people doing this in the whole world right now, and there's far too few seeing eye animals that are affordable for the people who have impairment and are maybe completely blind and need a seeing eye animal. Isn't that fascinating? And these animals are as well or better behaved and easier to take care of than dogs. That's not to say, I love dogs, by the way. That's not to say there's anything against dogs. It's just that their limited life expectancy and the fact that they are not the greatest at finding their way home and that sort of thing in comparison to the horse. So the horse has a kind of a better sense of direction, and so it's actually a better type of animal to use for that purpose. So we're going to be doing that. And we're also looking into grasses. We've been in contact with a place called Alice Springs National Park in Australia. And they are doing some interesting things with grasses and other kinds of plant life. And their climate is very similar to ours. And some of their soil conditions are not too different either. And so we are looking at what they're doing and seeing about certain hybrid grasses that they have that can feed animals and be year-round, because the only grass that we ever see on occasion is in the wintertime. We might have grass for like 6 weeks that comes up if we have a big enough rain. The problem is that it's very inconsistent, and it doesn't last long enough to support the raising of virtually any kind of pastoral crop or pastoral herd. And so what we're doing is we're permitting that to develop as well as part of our system. And the grasses will also supply food for all of the wildlife. Now, it just so happens we're really not into eating animals, but we know that other people use that as a subsistence aspect as well, or as an income. And so this provides them with that as an opportunity. Now, that doesn't mean that we necessarily are, say, in a prejudicial way that they shouldn't do it or anything like that. Nor are we encouraging people to necessarily do that. We're just saying that we want to provide people with the best means of their producing income and lifestyle and living conditions as they have had in the past, and which they are losing due to global warming and these other issues. So it's very important to see that all of this is a synergistic system that together is producing tremendous benefits, and it is doing so in ways that are remarkably simple, but at the same time haven't been necessarily successfully, or even maybe not, I shouldn't use the word successfully, haven't even been tried in their complete form before. And that's the reason they haven't been successful, is because you've got to kind of do the whole thing correctly or else it won't work. It has to be supportive of itself. There is a synergy between all the elements of putting this entire thing together. What else are we doing? We are looking into growing grasses that can also be used for fuel. So, you know, you've heard of switchgrass, but there may be other things besides that that could be used for fuel if you can take that, the energy that is within them, and produce alternative fuels, including ethanol. Ethanol is a very interesting thing, and I love the Brazilian people who are presently making an awful lot of it out of sugar cane. The problem is that sugar cane is not a crop that we could probably grow, not efficiently anyway. But there are grasses that could do just as well, and there are people in Canada right now who have been working on ways of converting grasses into ethanol efficiently. And that's a much better way of producing ethanol as a fuel than is corn, which you've probably heard of, and some other food crops. Those food crops take a tremendous amount of energy to create, and in the process, you don't end up with a lot more energy in the ethanol that you end up with. So So it isn't a good system. Now, if you have the corn already and it's just hanging around, then why not convert it to ethanol? And I say go for it. But if in most cases people have use for the corn or whatever other crop they're using to create the ethanol, and therefore it doesn't make sense. It just doesn't compute. So that's another area that we're looking into. We're looking into other crops as well. We've even examined peanuts. Although peanuts, genetically, they haven't come up with the best variety for what we're looking to do, because peanut oil is a great oil for diesel power. So we were looking into that. Also, it's a great food crop because it actually produces a lot of protein. But unfortunately, we're not quite there in terms of being able to hybrid the peanut to live in the kind of environment that we would try to put it into where there is desertification. But we are looking into that, and there's some people that are researching this even as I speak. So it's important to realize that within a year or two, some crops that are completely unavailable to us right now will become available. Isn't that remarkable? So we're right on the edge of the changes in technology and having used old technologies with the new technologies to produce some new results. Absolutely fascinating. We would like to be completely energy sufficient, which would include solar power, because you have lots of sunlight where we're at. The problem is that solar power, it isn't about collecting energy anymore. The collectors have gotten efficient enough so that it's actually affordable. It's about storage, batteries. No one's come up with an efficient way of storing electricity in huge quantities as you might use in a farm environment. And so that's where we're having some issues. We're looking for that. There's a lot of talk about different kinds of batteries, but so far nobody's come up with one that really, really works and holds a lot of energy for its size and weight. Just haven't found it yet. If you know more about that, you can give us a call or you can send us an email, because we're certainly always open to and looking for that. So this tells you some of the stuff we're involved in, and there's so much more to say. I haven't even scratched the surface about some of our experiments in energy and other things that we've done and some of the unique ways we constructed our nurseries and how we managed to grow plants with a few gallons a month of water and stuff. Just amazing, amazing things, but we're just out of time. So I guess that will be another show at another time to deal with it, and I'm hoping to hear from folks. I'm hoping to hear from you out there to let us know what you think of what I told you about, and if you have any suggestions as well. Open to suggestions always. I want to just tell you a couple of things. I had to grab my sheet of paper. Okay. This Sunday over at WDIS, I'm going to be on that station on Sunday, and it's How Metaphysics and Spirituality Support Each Other. That's the name of the show. And it'll be on from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're in the Boston metropolitan area, anywhere in the Northeast Coast, you can hear that show on 1170 a.m. Now, if you're not, you can go to WDIS.com and listen to it anywhere in the world, really. So that's if you're on the Internet, you can pick it up. And I'm hoping that you all will do that because I want to hear from you. WDISAM.com. I missed the AM part. WDISAM.com. Please tune into that. And one last thing is, I got somebody giving me this. If any of you are in the Phoenix area over at Mesa Fiesta Mall at Borders, I'm going to be talking about, or someone from the group I'm a part of will be talking about karma. Karma. Yes, we're going to be talking about karma and how karma affects people and why it is that it functions the way it does and et cetera. So we're going to talk about a little bit about karma if you're in that area. Okay, so we are just running out of time here. I hope that you found tonight's show interesting. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.